I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about the Quantum Leap Initiative, a year-long project of Indiana Humanities to link the humanities with Indiana's history in science, technology, engineering, and math, STEM. We'll discuss what it is and what it hopes to accomplish. My guests are Kira Amstutz of Indiana Humanities and Suzanne Wasson of Dow AgriSciences. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email nolimits at WFYI.org. Find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI. Or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking about a bold new initiative from Indiana Humanities. It's called the Quantum Leap Initiative. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Kira Amstutz, President and CEO of Indiana Humanities, and Suzanne Wasson, who is a commercial leader of U.S. Crop Protection at Dow AgriSciences. I'm sorry, Suzanne, I pretty well massacred that. My apologies. Not a great way to welcome you to the program, but I do, in fact, welcome you to the program. Good to see you both.
Thanks for having us.
Certainly.
It's nice to be here.
So, Kira, let's talk a little bit about what Quantum Leap is.
That's a great way to begin, and I'm glad we're starting with the big picture. So for those of you who don't know Indiana Humanities, we are a statewide nonprofit, and the shorthand version of our mission is we encourage Hoosiers to think, read, and talk using the tools of the humanities. And essentially, we explore the things people make and the experiences of being human. So that often plays out in the fields of history and literature, et cetera. But one of the things we like to do is frame our work in big initiatives to get people thinking, reading, and talking about a particular theme all at once. And so Quantum Leap is the theme we're going to be exploring for the next 2 years. And it is an exploration and celebration of the STEM fields and how the humanities and STEM together have really created so much of Indiana's past success, but also looking at our future through that lens.
And it runs through the end of 2018. Probably ought to clarify for those folks out there who wonder what STEM is. It's science, technology, engineering, and mathematics.
That's
correct. We those of us who work in the academic and educational fields abbreviated it a long time ago. What was the motivation for doing this, Kira?
Well, let's take a little mini leap back to last year. Mm-hmm. Last year was the state's bicentennial. And one of the things that we heard a lot about when we were asking Hoosiers, what are you thinking about? What's going on in your communities? What's interesting to you? And what are you thinking about when you're looking at the future of Indiana? And we kept coming back to all of this inventiveness. There's so much going on in the tech fields. And I know Suzanne can probably talk a lot about the dynamic world of agriculture and all of the things that are going on here in Indiana driving that. We've heard a lot about how technology is impacting people's lives, all kinds of things related to healthcare. And it seemed like maybe it's time for us to take a moment to use the tools of the humanities to say, okay, where are we in connecting these fields and what does it really mean for Indiana's future? So it had its roots a bit in the bicentennial. And then I think back to, we've been thinking about this topic for a while. We have a lot of STEM field related leaders on our Indiana Humanities board. So, you know, these topics are frequent. But I remember seeing a poster a few years ago, John, and it was done by the Utah Humanities Department. And it was, if you can imagine, a scientist in a little lab coat, and there's a giant T-Rex looming behind him. And the poster said, science can tell you how to clone a T-Rex. Humanities can tell you why that might be a bad idea. So that's a little example of how we view science, technology, engineering, and math and the humanities as really two sides of the same coin. And an interesting area of exploration, and certainly a contemporary area of exploration.
So, Suzanne, how did you get dragged into this or get plugged into it?
Well, I've been a board member for 5 years of the Indiana Humanities Council, and it's a fabulous group. And given that I spend my days in more of the STEM-related activities around bringing new technology, whether that is traits in crops or crop protection products to help farmers grow more food, I was looking for something both to be involved in the community locally, but that was slightly different from my day job. And the humanities brings that. I'm an avid reader, and after visiting with Kira and some of the other board members, just felt like it would be a great connection and so different from what I do in my day-to-day job. And it's been a great partnership. I've loved being a member of the board and watching all these different programming themes that have come out over the last few years.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the Indiana Humanities Quantum Leap Initiative. We're going to talk more about that as we go forward about how it works. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. So, Kira, let's get down to nuts and bolts. So we've got this two-year initiative. What are the components of it? What actually is going to be happening during that two-year period?
So your listeners might be wondering, like, who's the audience for Indiana Humanities? Because I think that's a common question that we get. And really, it's all Hoosiers. So we work in all 92 counties, and we reach a broad variety of audiences. So when I explain some of the programs, you'll see that we have things for school kids, we have things for adult learners, and we have really something for everyone. So there are several different ways that you can engage in Quantum Leap. So let's say you're interested in going to lectures and talks and engaging in that way. We actually have a kickoff event this week that I have just learned has sold out. But apparently, if you are interested in going and being on standby, I'll give you information about that in a moment. Alan Lightman is going to be at Butler University, and he is an MIT physicist. He's the head of the humanities department at MIT. And he is going to be in conversation with Rabbi Sandy Sasso. Mm-hmm. And I think they're going to be exploring not only his famous book, Einstein's Dreams, but really thinking about the intersection of the humanities, religion, and science. So it should be a fascinating conversation. And as I said, that is sold out. But if you go to Butler University at about 6:20, if there are any remaining seats, we will release them on standby. If you are a reader, we have a free lending library for book clubs. And we've got quite a wide variety of books relating to these fields that you can borrow for free for your book club, and you can host your own discussion groups. We have a wonderful event coming up on May 9th. So if you like food and conversation, I know Suzanne will talk more about this later. It's called Chew on This, and this event is going on statewide. And the theory of these dinnertime conversations is, are you sure? We're going to be talking about facts and evidence and data and how we know what we know and why that might be important. So if you're interested in an intimate, facilitated, with great facilitators conversation, check us out on May 9th. And then we have adult field trips. So we'll be going to an observatory, the Link Observatory in Mooresville. We're going to be having a great event at the zoo thinking about what is human these days with the orangutans. Mm-hmm. I won't give away anymore, but that's going to be a terrific event. And then we also will be doing next year, actually kicking off this fall, a statewide read of Frankenstein. There's lots more, including a grants program and other things, and we can get in more detail in a minute. Or if your callers have questions about other ways they mm-hmm. can be involved. But the way our programs work is we offer a wide spectrum of activities. So we encourage you to go to Indiana Humanities website and check out all of the ways you can be engaged. But we're hopefully going to have something for everyone.
And feel free to give them that URL.
Yes, IndianaHumanities.org.
Okay, Indiana Humanities. So you got a cue here, Suzanne, on the dining experience. Tell me a little more about that.
So there will be several of us, including myself, that will be facilitating these discussions about what is true. And I think in this era when a large majority of the population reads something on the internet and assumes it must be fact, then we get into these huge debates. And even through the last election cycle, we saw the fake news and the alternate facts and different things that have come forward.
Alternative facts.
Alternative facts. Yes. There you go. And when it comes to looking at science and technology and innovation, then how do we find what is true? And working in the field of agriculture, where my company sells GMO seeds, where do people go to get information? And then there's the question of how do you discuss that? And the fact that a mom in a supermarket really wants to make sure that the food that she's buying is healthful and safe for her family. But she's not necessarily interested in listening to one of our scientists talk about the reams of data that get submitted to an agency in the U.S. government and what we have to go through to get a product approved. So really having that open, candid dialogue about what we consider truth, what is out there that we may not agree with, but how do we have an open, candid dialogue about that? I think it's going to be a fascinating evening of dialogue and discussion.
Go ahead, Kira.
And one thing that I want to emphasize on the Chew on This event is it is a great way for us to model something that's very important in the humanities, and that's civil conversation. So one of the great things I've learned about these gatherings is you're right. As Suzanne pointed out, you might get people from all perspectives who don't agree on the topic. And actually, that's okay. And it's something we encourage, and we create a safe space to wrestle with some of these really, really difficult issues that are brought up by science, technology, engineering, and math, and the humanities. All coming together.
So how did you come up with the idea of these sort of the intimate dinner conversation idea? Because most of the time in this era, we're looking for, you know, maximum exposure. You blast it out through social media, or you try to leverage mainstream media such as this, doing this radio program and all of that. That's almost counterintuitive. Kira.
Well, we started thinking about this years ago as we were imagining how the humanities can be a tool for building community and strengthening our ability, exercising those conversation muscles that maybe have atrophied in the sense that we often huddle with only people who have our point of view. And so we've done these now for about 5 years on a variety of different topics. And I think what you find is when you break bread with someone, when you sit down and have that kind of intimate experience of having a meal, having a conversation in a really thoughtful way on an important topic, it really opens people's minds and sometimes, you know, sometimes changes perspective. But often it introduces you to new people and new ideas and that aha moment that sometimes comes along with the humanities.
So what it sounds like the other great collective experience, though, is going to be reading Frankenstein.
Oh, I think it's going to be delightful.
How did you settle on that book?
Well, 2018 will be the 200th anniversary of that piece.
Okay.
And as we were imagining, what book could we encourage communities and school kids and other folks to read that would really encapsulate this idea of quantum leap? It's fascinating that we reached back in time to pick such a historic work, but it remains very, very current today. And we're really excited to bring that conversation to bear on that 200th anniversary.
Well, was it part of the idea, though, that because one of the themes is obviously fears about what technology could do to humanity? I mean, it about the destruction of the human spirit at some level.
Yeah, I think that's going to be, you know, part of the conversation for sure. It's a many-layered book, and I think it really helps us think about what, you know, are there limits to what we can know? How far should we push the limits? What does it mean when we have a new technology? How do we embrace it? But there's also a lot more there. I mean, you know, the monster really had the experience of being the other, and there's mm-hmm. a lot of otherness there. So there's a lot of thinking about how we view people who are different in society. Mary Shelley was 17 when she wrote the book. There's quite a backstory there.
That's a little short of amazing.
I know. I mean, it's incredible to have written such an enduring piece at a very tender age. So there's a lot to explore, and I think it's got enough richness. And certainly, it's one of those books that everybody thinks they know. But if you haven't read it in a long time, there's a lot more there.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about a bold new initiative from Indiana Humanities. It's called the Quantum Leap Initiative. It will be running through 2018. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. My guests are Kira Amstutz, she's president and CEO of Indiana Humanities, and Suzanne Wasson, who is commercial leader, U.S. crop protection at Dow AgroSciences. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about the Indiana Humanities Quantum Leap Initiative. It's a project that is going to span much of the next 2 years, concluding in 2018, end of 2018, that attempts to link the humanities to Indiana's history with science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, otherwise known as the STEM disciplines. My guests are Kira Amstutz, she's president and CEO of Indiana Humanities, and Suzanne Wasson, who is commercial leader, U.S. crop protection at Dow AgroSciences, and also a board member for Indiana Humanities. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. So before we left, we've talked about some of the programs that are going to be part of this, the pieces that fit together. Suzanne, I'm going to toss this one to you first. What do you hope that Quantum Leap accomplishes? I mean, what's the end goal here?
Well, I think that we have multiple goals, and as Kira mentioned, the base of what we do at Indiana Humanities is encouraging people to think, read, and talk. And I would say over the last, several years, we have lost, as Kira mentioned, that opportunity to have civil dialogue around topics that people don't always agree on. And it's become very black and white in terms of I'm either for it or I'm against it. And how people accumulate the information to make that informed decision is something that I think that we can use this program to explore. And once again, I think a vision would be that we can have these dialogue sessions, no matter what form, to talk about these issues and about technology coming, whether it's the cars that don't have drivers or the newest innovation in medicine or the newest product in agriculture. And we can have an open dialogue to not only help educate Hoosiers, but also to help inform them and their opinions as well.
Is some of this the anxiety that you're trying to speak to? I mean, obviously, there's a tremendous partisan divide in the country. But I think you're also alluding to kind of an ideological and cultural divide as well, including some of the fears that that technology making jobs disappear, which drove an awful lot of the last election. Specifically, how do you think this initiative will address that? Suzanne, but I want to hear Kira's thoughts as well.
Well, I do think that people typically form an opinion very early the first time they hear about something or read something. And the opportunity to engage in further dialogue where you go beyond the first message email that you got or the first Twitter account that you saw, and then you form an opinion immediately. But to have a more open dialogue and to get the other side of the story and know that there are two sides, because we've become very polarized. We're either, as I said, for it or against it. And just to be able to have these dialogue around these issues that can be difficult and perhaps scary to people in terms of technology, whether it affects jobs or if I'm not sure that I want to consume something that is new technology, we're very okay to get the next generation of iPhone the minute it comes out. But then with other technologies, we're much more hesitant on, is that a good thing for me?
Is this Kira kind of the counter Twitter, that there are some concepts, truth, wisdom that cannot be contained in 140 characters?
You are speaking my language, John. That's what the humanities can allow us to do, right? To go beyond the soundbite. Although I do want to talk about our soundbites program in a little bit, so don't let me forget.
Okay.
But back to your point. I mean, I think that part of the reason why this theme felt right for right now is that we do have a lot of anxiety and fear about changes that are going on in our world, whether they're scientific changes or technological changes. I mean, I imagine that a lot of people that are listening today might be driving their car. Well, in a few years, they might not be anymore. And what are the ramifications of that? And how do we feel about that? And why does that matter? These are all things that we can be thoughtful about in a program like this and find some great space to discuss it. But one of the things that you won't see from us is that we won't shy away from the difficulty of wrestling with these, you know, with these topics. So you're going to see in the span of this two-year programming, particularly an emphasis on ethics. I mean, these issues raise a lot of important ethical questions, a lot of important why questions, and that's what we're here to raise. And I think that when you were talking a little bit about, you know, STEM and the humanities a moment ago, when you were teeing up the question for Suzanne, I started thinking about a phrase that one of our steering committee members used, and that was, you know, sort of the STEMification of everything. And even though I think we hear a lot about STEM these days, you know, again, the way we're approaching this is the way the humanities can bring something to bear on this conversation that's different, that's deeper, that takes us beyond that Twitter feed and can hopefully help us wrestle internally with how we feel about these changes and what they might mean for our future.
And we talked a little bit about this over the break. Kira, does the fact that, you know, what makes this program different is the whole idea that you're trying to bridge the gap between the humanities and the STEM disciplines. That's a gap that's relatively recent in historical conception. I mean, for example, during the Age of the Enlightenment, the founders, Jefferson, and the other great thinkers of that period didn't make distinctions between what we call the humanities and what we would now call the STEM disciplines. They either called them all science or all philosophy or something like that. Are you trying to sort of reintroduce that enlightenment concept that knowledge is simply knowledge and it's worthwhile?
You're a step ahead of us. Actually, it's a very clever way to think about it. And I think it's true. It was true then. And I think what we've missed is it's true today. So I was just a few weeks ago out at Suzanne's shop. I was getting a tour of some of their really unique scientific facilities because perhaps, listeners, it could be the site of a future field trip. And what I was struck by, and maybe Suzanne can speak to this, is that even in a scientific facility, it was not lost on me that there were as many like hard scientists as there were communicators and ethicists and other kinds of leaders that all come together to do this. So I think it's been a bit of an artificial barrier, John, that has been perfectly unhelpful in the sense that as we think about inventiveness, invention, and the things that have driven our economy, they don't come in separate packages. So I don't know. Suzanne, is that something you want to talk a little bit about, how those things work together in your world?
Yeah, someone who does work in the STEM disciplines. But
absolutely. And I think I can say this broadly about business in general. So if we're developing our next generation of leaders, we need them to be excellent communicators. And it's not just that you know all the agronomy around a seed, or that you know your products that you're selling, but you have to be a good communicator. And I will say in agriculture, it's very much a relationship-oriented business. So it's not that you just communicate with a text or with an email, but you can go stand in front of a customer or a farmer and say, here's why I think you should use this product, and here's how it's going to benefit you on your farm. And as I look at the next generation coming through, that isn't always their area of expertise, to be able to have those face-to-face conversations. And for leaders across all businesses, we need to continue to, despite the fact that they have a great science background when they start working for us, if they can't communicate, then that's going to be a challenge for them to progress in their career.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about a new initiative from Indiana Humanities. It's a statewide initiative that is going to be running through the end of 2018. It's called the Quantum Leap Initiative. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Kira, I'm going to ask, because it is No Limits, I'm going to ask what is the uncomfortable question here.
Okay.
Which is, in many ways, I think there's a perception, certainly in the legislature or whatever, that the STEM disciplines are more important than the humanities, that they get elevated. I know there is an argument that part of the reason that that occurs is that the STEM disciplines' achievement is much more easy to quantify than it is than it is in the humanities, because the measurements are just softer and more diffuse. There is this in part an attempt to make an argument for the humanities in, you know, what is a world that does want to reduce everything almost to binary impulses.
I think the short answer is yes. I think that it's important for us to think about the acquisition of knowledge and wisdom as a combined effort. It's not a binary choice. But I see that this is just a real opportunity to get people maybe thinking a little bit differently about the humanities. One thing I will say, as I've observed the STEMification of our conversation about education, I feel like the pendulum may be starting to begin to swing back. And the evidence that I see is, you know, I'm an avid reader of a lot of national newspapers and business mm-hmm. journals and things. And it's not unusual now to see an article, particularly about the tech industry, saying we need more philosophy majors, we need more English majors, because you know what? You know, we know we've always had a challenge getting enough coders, but gosh darn it, if they can't put things in context and they don't have a broader worldview and they can't, you know, kind of grapple with the complexity of the issues and how they might impact human beings, then maybe we're limiting ourselves. I mean, Steve Jobs is a great example of somebody who really was the embodiment, I think, of a modern embodiment of STEM in the humanities, in the way that he approached business and the way that he approached design and the way he talked about invention. So I guess I feel like certainly STEM has dominated the conversation, perhaps for an important and notable reason. But I do think there's a huge role for the humanities to play. And maybe we haven't been good enough at voicing it. And maybe now we're starting to see a recognition that this type of learning and this type of conversation is really important.
Probably ought to define. I just realized I've been sloppy in my questioning here.
All right.
Which is, we probably ought to define what the humanities are, because I've defined over and over again
good
what
luck.
STEM is. Yeah. Well, that's
why
you're there.
You're
the
great,
one who's got to speak.
The professional.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess I would say it's the study of things humans make and what makes us human. So the way it's often defined is the fields of the liberal arts. So if you think of history and literature and ethics and philosophy and comparative religion and world cultures and the study of language, all of those things generally fit within the humanities fields. But I like to think about it in that humanness, you know, the notion of humanness and how that defines us and how that defines our world.
Suzanne, as someone who works primarily in a STEM world, how do you make the argument for the humanities?
Well,
because obviously you value them tremendously. You're devoting your time and your treasure to them.
You bet. And I think, once again, mm-hmm. I go back to as we continue to evolve around technology, especially in the company that I work in, how do we communicate? How do we present ourselves to the general population, not only to our customers in the agriculture field, but to the broader population, the consumers who are eating food every day, which is everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we present that in a way? Once again, I go back to the example of I can tell anybody that it takes 10 to 15 years and about $350 million to bring a new pesticide to the market. But nobody really cares about that. They want to make sure that if that product's used on a crop that they then consume, that it's safe.
Mm-hmm.
And how we tell that story is incredibly important where, one, we're more believable, because I will tell you today, from an industry perspective, we are not believable.
Mm-hmm.
And we rely on our farmers in many cases to present that story. They're much more believable than we are today. But being able to articulate that in this fast-paced world of communication where news is news the second it happens is going to be critical. So that's why I feel very strongly about having that ability to have that dialogue communication for all of our employees is critical going forward.
In terms of this whole idea of talking about the uncomfortable subjects, starting with a chew on this, but that mm-hmm. seems to be a recurrent theme. What do you hope will be the end outcome of this? I'll start with Kira since I started with Suzanne last time, but I want to hear Suzanne's thoughts as well.
I think there's something that happens to all of us as people and as community members when we take on a tough topic. And when we actually sit and really listen to someone else who has a different point of view. One of the things that I worry about just as a human, as a mother, as an American, is that when we can't have those kinds of exchanges, we've probably lost an opportunity to really build relationships and community in an important way. And I think that sometimes this idea of building community through dialogue is sort of looked at as a throwaway idea. But it really matters. If you can't have conversations about tough stuff, how are you going to make decisions as a society, as a community? How are you going to build the kind of bonds that you need and the kind of trust you need? Kind of back to this issue of trust, that we often need to be able to make decisions and move forward. So, again, that's one of the unusual roles that we can play as a humanities organization. We can push people into those uncomfortable places. And again, the outcome is often greater trust, maybe a greater level of understanding, and certainly an openness to hear different points of view.
Suzanne.
Well, I get the opportunity to have difficult conversations all the time in the industry that I'm in. And you know, we get the question.
Glad to see someone else has that.
All the time about, well, is organic the way to go, or can conventionally grown food, which is cheaper in most cases, the way to go?
Yeah.
And I can very honestly say that there's a place for both. We actually sell a pesticide that goes on organic produce.
Mm-hmm.
It's an insecticide. And most people think there aren't any pesticides used on organic produce, which is not true. So being able to have that dialogue and say it's not black mm-hmm. or white, yes or no, there's two sides to every story. To be able to feed this growing world population, conventional agriculture is really the only way we're going to be able to do that, through advanced technology. But I can have a different opinion than my neighbor, but we can both coexist and have those different opinions. And I think this is a lot about what having this open dialogue is about going forward.
Yeah, I think we're getting close to a break, but one of the areas I'd like to push into is something you've both alluded to here, that in many ways we seem to be moving away from a knowledge or evidence-based or even thought-based kind of culture, and it seems like this is an attempt to restore that along all fronts. If you're just joining us, we are talking about Indiana Humanities Quantum Leap Initiative. It's going to be taking place over the next 2 years, concluding in 2018. It's statewide. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimitswfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Kira Amstutz of Indiana Humanities and Suzanne Wasson of Dow AgroSciences. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about Indiana Humanities Quantum Leap Initiative, which runs through the end of next year, 2018. It's a statewide initiative. My guests are Kira Amstutz, she's president and CEO of Indiana Humanities, and Suzanne Wasson, who is commercial leader, U.S. Crop Protection at Dow AgroSciences. If you want to join the conversation, you can give us a call at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimitswfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can do what a listener named David has done and reach out to us via Twitter. David writes, and I should say, if you want to do that, you can find us at WFYI. David writes, trying to understand the point of this initiative, it seems to be to all get back to some kind of consumer market business deal. Kira.
Actually, this really has nothing to do with consumer business at all. It's really using the tools of the humanities to explore the STEM fields and the humanities together. So if you look at the array of programs from reading fiction and literature that relate to these topics to our field trips that are very broad and inclusive to, our dinner conversation series, there's really no direct commercial element at all. It's taking it beyond perhaps the narrow to a much broader point of view. So again, I'm sorry if this is a little confusing because there are many moving pieces. So I would encourage folks that are interested but maybe haven't heard the whole conversation to go back to indianahumanities.org and you can look at the array of programs that are available. That may help.
I want to pick up on the point I alluded to right before we went to the break. There are people who now are referring to this as the post-factual society or post. And if there's a connection here, it does seem to be that, reflection, research, thought are values that we ought to preserve, and that really cuts across the intellectual disciplines, that in many ways this is a defense of knowledge. Suzanne, you're nodding your head, so I'm going with you first.
Okay. Well, it's really fascinating to see what sources of information people use in their decision-making and their opinion-forming. And I can tell you, at least in the business that I'm in, when we talk to consumers, they don't necessarily trust our government. Mm-hmm. They're skeptical about what they read from a university person because they think a company has paid them to say something.
And all too often they have, unfortunately.
Yes. And so you get to the point where they'll go on social media, and we've done our own internal research at our company, which says they tend to really trust the average person, some of their best friends, and what their opinions are. And a lot of times that shapes what their opinion is, regardless of facts or how much in-depth research the person that they're relying on that opinion have come from. And to me, I think that sets us up for this continual conflict that we see between what is the truth and how do we go about trying to understand the truth and the openness to listen to both sides.
Kira.
Part of why I'm excited that Quantum Leap is happening right now is for exactly the reasons that you asked the question. I think it's relevant. Mm-hmm. I think the humanities are relevant. I think this is an important way for us to wrestle with big topics. And I also think it's an important way for us to understand and build on our history. So a component of Quantum Leap we really haven't talked a lot about yet mm-hmm. is you know, part of what we do in the humanities is we tell stories. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways we want to bring this topic to life is through a series of storytelling initiatives. So one way that your listeners can engage with learning more perhaps about our history in this area and potentially our future is we have essentially a mini podcast series called Sound Bites. Mm-hmm. And if you go to IndianaHumanities.org or you go to iTunes, you can download Sound Bites. Or if you're in Northwest Indiana, you can hear them on Lakeshore Public Media. And we hope to have them on more radio stations as the initiative continues. But through those 5-minute segments, we're sharing lots of stories of Hoosier inventiveness and creation. And we hope that by telling a lot of these stories, not only of contemporary Quantum Leap moments, but of past Quantum Leap moments, we're going to help build on the knowledge of what has driven Indiana over the last 200 years and what is driving us in the future. We've got some fascinating stories in this series, including one of my favorites is the first episode. So if you're wanting to try these out, it's called The Attic Lab. And the way we define this episode is, how did a campus dance and a room full of bunnies in Bloomington, Indiana, lead to one of the 20th century's greatest breakthroughs in genetics? And so this is a fascinating, so there's a jukebox involved in this story. There's lots of really interesting background on a chapter of Indiana history that you may not know, but has had a huge impact on the field of science.
We've gotten an email question from a listener named Ben, and if you want to reach out and join the conversation by email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Ben writes, can you tell me more about how to get school kids and teachers involved in talking about or participating in this initiative?
Oh, I'm glad, Ben. Thank you for the question. We do work with a wide variety of audiences and are really excited about the ways that we can engage school kids in this program. Well, one way is actually through that Sound Bites program. We know teachers are going to be using those little clips to help in the classroom, maybe illustrate some of the lesson plans they're working on. Through the Frankenstein program, we have a lot of resources and toolkits and ways that teachers can apply for resources to bring in a speaker to their school, to have reading programs, and to really activate that. We also have a standalone grant program that's available to certainly more than teachers, but to different other nonprofits in the state of Indiana that want to do a Quantum Leap program. So if you're inspired by this initiative and you've got an idea of maybe an exhibit you'd like to do, a speaker you'd like to bring in, a way you'd like to enliven this topic, reach out to us. We have a deadline coming up this summer, and apply for a Quantum Leap grant, and you can do your own program. So we'll have a wide variety of tools for teachers.
Do you worry at times that you're swimming upstream on this? I mean, there are studies from like the Pew Center and all of that that say that for a distressing number of Americans, people these days, when they encounter information that is contrary to their beliefs, rather than forcing them to reconsider, instead, it entrenches them far more deeply in their belief system, which, you know, in many ways is sort of the contradiction of the age of reason and, you know, the founding principles of this country. Suzanne, you're nodding your head.
Well, we've done a lot of digging into that very question. And there is a segment of the population, when you talk about specific technology, that is not going to change their mind, no matter what kind of civil dialogue that you can have with them. They've made their mind up. But we find that middle group, which is a large percentage, you know, 60-70% of the population, is open to factual information and helping them shape what they think. So I do think that there is a segment of the population that's never going to change their mind. I did want to mention as well, beyond just what Kira has shared so far, we've got some other really interesting topics that we're in the incubation stage. So talking about climate change, talking about fracking, stem cell research, digital privacy, artificial intelligence. So these are just some of the things that we're looking around in terms of our next programming opportunity. So I think there's going to be lots of things for us to talk about with this program.
Kira, where did the name Quantum Leap come from? How did you settle on that?
Well, this is why you have brilliant communications people. Mm-hmm. We wrestled with this for a long time, but I think we can give the credit to Kristen Foose-Wells on our staff, who thought it really embodied this notion of the future, which is mm-hmm. part of what we want people to think about. But it has a little bit of nostalgia built in too, and we kind of we thought it captured the spirit of this. And realize we've talked about a lot of heavy things today. Mm-hmm. But number one, our goal isn't necessarily to change someone's mind. It's to provide a forum for us to think about science, technology, engineering, and math, the changes that are happening in our world, and how we can wrestle with them in our own mm-hmm. way. But there's also a lot of fun involved. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you go with us on these adult field trips, you are going to learn something, you're going to engage with some brilliant people, and you're going to have quite an experience. We are having a readathon to kick off the Frankenstein theme at the Medical History Museum with all kinds of activities. We have art exhibits. We have plays. We have a million different ways that you can engage with this from as if you want to go heavy, we've got heavy. But if you also want to maybe learn a little Indiana history, you want to engage, you want to really think about the possibilities of the future in an uplifting way, we have that for you too. And I really would encourage folks, if you're interested in this theme, check out our Soundbites episodes on iTunes or on IndianaHumanities.org. Sign up for one of our upcoming events. One of the other ones we haven't talked about, but I think this is brilliant. Again, mm-hmm. this just shows the depth of participation we have in this initiative so far, is in October, there's going to be a Wikipedia edit-a-thon. And let me talk to you about this. So there is a conference that's going on that you can participate in if this interests mm-hmm. you to make sure that Hoosier women in STEM historically are better represented in Wikipedia. Mm-hmm. Because what we find is Wikipedia is a very helpful resource, but doesn't often reflect the breadth and depth of the subject matter that it covers. And so this group of historians is going to lead this group. But if you want to participate, you don't have to be a historian to be involved. If you would like to help with this edit-a-thon, we're going to make sure these Hoosier women who have been so influential in the areas of science, technology, engineering, and math are well represented in Wikipedia. So as you can see, there's something for everybody.
Now, is the schedule, because this does run through the end of 2018, so we've got a little more than a year and a half still to go. Is the schedule completely set, or are you still adding new events, activities, all of that?
That's a great question. I would say we have a terrific core of activities mm-hmm. set, but there will be all kinds of things added. And the best way to keep up with us is either through social media. So if you're into Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, we're active on all of those platforms. We send out a monthly newsletter. So if you go to IndianaHumanities.org and sign up for our newsletter, we will send you once a month great information about how you can be engaged and plug in. And one other thing I should mention is almost all of our events are free. If they have a cost, it is nominal, simply to cover perhaps a little bit of food cost or something. But we try to make sure that that our work is widely accessible to a wide variety of Hoosiers all across the state.
And how many of these activities have costs associated? How many are free?
Well, for example, the kickoff event this week with Alan Lightman is free. The Chew on This does have a small cost because we're at restaurants, so there'll be mm-hmm. just a set fee for that. So really, I would say it's probably most are free. A few have a nominal charge. And remember, we have things like our free lending library for book clubs. There'll be a wide variety of events related to Frankenstein that will also be free and open to the public. So if you're interested, one of the other things I want to make sure to say today is, because we haven't set everything mm-hmm. completely in stone, we still are in the process of building certain components of this program. If you work for a nonprofit and you think, wow, we've got something that really seems to intersect with that, give us a call. If you're with a company and you're like, wow, this is really interesting this might be interesting to my employees and I'd love to reach out and know more, let us know. We're a big tent. We like to have lots of partners involved, as you can just sense from, I think, the way we've described the program so far. We have a lot of ways to get people engaged, and we're really looking forward to finding out who else wants to play along.
So, Suzanne, the Chew on This that you are going to be facilitating, Where will that be? And when is that?
So that will be in Carmel on May 9th at Market District. There will be multiple of those events going on all around.
On the same evening?
On the same evening, yes.
Okay. But, and what is the cost to attend that?
I believe it depends on each venue. So it's usually, I don't know, about $15, but that includes your meal and your entertainment for the evenings.
And I would just comment, the first event I did when I came on the board of Indiana Humanities was to go on a chew on this event that was based on talking about prohibition in Indiana. And at a local, was all at different bars, and we had a special cocktail from during the prohibition period, and we talked about why and how
and it
happened.
Didn't take the enamel off your teeth or anything like that.
It was fabulous. So okay. I think these events are really great from a dialogue, interacting with meeting new people. It's a very fun event.
Just a note, John, we have locations for that chew on this event in Indy, Carmel, Muncie, Greencastle, Bloomington, Valparaiso, Jasper, and Fort Wayne. And so the way it works is everybody's having dinner at the same time, same topic, but different facilitators. And then we have tweeters at each location that aren't sort of saying, John said this, but they're taking note and commenting on the interesting things that happen in the conversation. So even if you can't go, I would definitely make sure you check out the Twitter traffic from that night, because it'll be a fascinating accumulation of the interesting conversations that happen statewide.
And then when the community read of Frankenstein, when does that...
We are kicking off Frankenstein with a Frankenfest and a readathon at the Indiana Medical History Museum on September 30th. And so if you're interested in maybe being a part of that, or you want to get involved in that Frankenstein initiative, which again will go throughout 18, please let us know. But I think that's going to be a really a very useful text to help us think through some of these fascinating questions.
Would you consider doing another book then next year, since that you've got 2 years to do this initiative?
Well, we're kicking it off September 30th, but it'll go through the end of 18. Because part of what we're doing, John, with that, with the Frankenstein program, is we're offering communities and schools and other groups stipends. So if they want to host their own events, they can. So we want to give people plenty of time to plan. But we do have lots of other books in our free lending library that we can send for people to have discussions that all relate to these topics, including Lab Girl, Hidden Figures. Those are two, I think, that are quite popular right now. So check that out if you are looking for something really great for your book club.
And if people want a complete schedule of events for Quantum Leap, where should they go?
They should go to IndianaHumanities.org. And one other program I haven't mentioned, but it's coming up soon on May 25th, is we are in partnership with Indy Reads having a book launch. It will be the Indiana book launch for Pulitzer Prize finalist Adrian Mateka, and this is his new book, Map to the Stars. And he is an Indianapolis-born writer. This book is perfectly on target with Quantum Leap. He is a terrific speaker. So I encourage you to go on May 25th to Indy Reads Books to join us for that book launch.
And again, to find the information, it's IndianaHumanities.org.
And then you'll see on there is a Quantum Leap section, and everything you would want to know about Quantum Leap is there.
Thank you both. This has been a lovely conversation, and I've enjoyed spending the hour with you. I'd like to thank my guests, Kira Amstutz, she's president and CEO of Indiana Humanities, and Suzanne Wasson, she's commercial leader of U.S. crop protection at Dow AgroSciences. I'd like to also thank our listeners and invite them to come back on Thursday when we're going to be talking about Indy Food Drop, a new initiative that aims to save tons of food. I'm John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.